Welcome, Pinto and Sean Bean patrons. Welcome to Extra Beans.
It's Extra Beans.
Hello.
It's here again.
Patrons.
Extra Beans. Extra.
Hello.
Extra.
Thank you for your support.
Extra. Oh, inner sanctum, isn't it, Patreon people? Welcome into the treehouse. We've gone up the rope ladder. It's just us. Is that good?
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah.
In a way, I wish we'd gone for, instead of extra beans, we should have gone for three bean salad in the treehouse.
Reel up the rope ladder. Reel it up. Reel
load the potato up. Guns. No one else is coming in.
Yeah, load the potato guns. Maris Piper. Oh, right to the face. Oh, that'll smart. Keep away.
Always taking his eye out.
Safety first, fun second.
I've got enough scotch eggs for everyone.
And I've learnt how to draw slightly erotic pictures. Is that part of everyone's childhood?
I don't think our patrons necessarily want you to do them an erotic caricature of themselves. There'll be some that might, in which case, you know, get in touch, but get in touch probably privately with Henry, I'd say.
Yeah, yeah.
Ben and I don't want that mud on our hands.
You don't want any part of that?
No.
Fair enough.
Anyway, here's some extra beans. Enjoy.
Welcome to Three Bean Salad Extra Beans, including extra bits from the shows, bonus material, exclusive content, and miscellaneous.
Extra bits.
Extra, extra. Beans all about it.
Extra bean. Never been heard bean before.
That was a fabulous meal, thank you. And if we could just have a look at your beans trolley.
Now, of course, we did an episode about dinosaurs, but we didn't use everything we recorded. We held some back, much like Mother Nature held back the DNA of dinosaurs in the mouths of mosquitoes, which they then put into amber. If that's not too tortured a metaphor.
It's almost uncanny how similar those two ideas are, isn't it?
And so here we are reanimating the... No, what is it? So these recordings are as if taken from the stomach of a mosquito.
If they have stomachs.
If they have stomachs. Good point, Mike. Very good point.
Spliced into a Petri dish.
Yeah.
Warmed up.
Warnings from a scientist have been ignored. And we've gone ahead and reconstructed it, haven't we?
And listening to this happens at your own risk.
And there's a very sweaty man in a Hawaiian shirt trying to stop it from happening.
No, he's not trying to stop it from happening.
What's he trying to do again?
He's a bad guy, isn't he? He's trying to... he's stealing the spunk, isn't he?
Yeah. He's organising a spunk heist.
There's a sweaty man in a Hawaiian shirt who is currently organising... he's camped out outside... Ben's home.
He's going to say, you've only blown the bloody nuts off at the end of the movie. Well, it's all gone wrong.
Clever girl. Isn't he? I think he's trying to steal embryos and to give them to the evil company called InGen, who have an interest in trying to...
And sell them as human embryos.
Oh, God.
And then get some very surprised surrogate parents.
I'll tell you what, that'll lead to some bloody awkward parents' evenings, won't it? Your son, stop eating all of the other pupils. It's really, we think it's going to hold him back long term.
Although he's tracking very well with his literacy.
Let's talk about the positives for once with this kid. All he hears is stop eating the other kids, stop tearing the teacher's heads off.
He has revolutionised our basketball team, though, I must say.
Cool, sir, these days you probably can't probably can't get in trouble for that kind of thing, and it's more like the other kids have to apologise for getting stuck in his throat while he ate them. Starting to lean on that voice quite a lot.
Yeah.
The old reactionary Henry voice.
Yeah, you're going to cross a Rubicon at some point where you don't know where your real voice ends and that voice begins.
Yeah. Well, eventually I start doing him more often than me, and then I refer to myself ironically as a voice that he does. And then you flipped, and then you've become what we all become. In the latter stages of our lives.
Yeah. Full Clarkson.
Full Clarkson.
Okay, so this is the stuff from our dinosaurs ep. Enjoy. They say, don't they, that crocodiles and alligators are essentially dinosaurs. Is that true?
What, that they lived concurrently?
I think it's that they say that they haven't changed since the dinosaur times. But what I don't understand is why every other animal evolved. You know, yeah. We evolved from apes to become slightly weedier, less physically
imposing.
Why
crocodiles still aren't crabs?
Well, yeah, we're all going towards crab at an alarming rate. And the crocodile's just not changed.
What's the hold?
Well, that's the other thing they say is, and they say this about sharks as well, but they say this immensely successful predator hasn't changed in 40 million years. But I've never seen a crocodile, you know, in a pret-a-manger.
Open the Hay Book Festival.
Or open the Hay... Exactly.
Open a vape shop.
But yeah. I've never seen a crocodile go onto a plane and turn left. Is that because they're piloting it?
You've never seen a caiman with an Olympic medal, have you?
Exactly.
And if you ever get the chance to look at the books of a business run by a crocodile, it's an absolute mess.
Complete.
And they won't get an accountant.
It's all just instinct.
I tell you what, their approach to bookkeeping, that's in the blimmin' Jurassic era.
Never mind workers' rights, eh?
Ooh. This is going to be an absolute nightmare to go through these books. He's declared elk legs as the same as a dead fox. So we're going to have to look through that again. He's also...
He's trying to say his own skin is an asset.
It's not an asset. It is. It's part of the... I mean, it's part of the business. I mean, it's a... What is it? It's not an expense. It's hard. It's a nightmare. Do you know what I mean? He's trying to say that dragging a hog down to the bottom of a river, spinning it round,
is ineligible for VAT.
Yeah. And he's trying to say that grabbing a goat by the arse, dragging it into the river, spinning it until it drowns, and stashing its corpse under a rock... He's trying to claim that as a holiday. He's trying to claim that as a business trip. But I suppose that the idea, isn't it, is that the crocs, we can call them crocs.
Yeah, I think people will understand now what we're talking
I think
about.
People will
yeah.
get it.
Yeah.
I think croc, the
crocs
idea
and
is
owls.
Crocs,
yeah.
alligators.
Crocs and owls. Mm-hmm. Crocs and alligators. They've evolved to a point where there's no improvement. That's the implication, is it? That you can't get better than basically hanging around in rivers.
But that's not true, Henry, because imagine a crocodile, big 8-foot-long saltwater crocodile with two massive crab pincers.
Mm.
Suddenly you're looking at more fierce than beast.
But the trouble is, it's such a big step to take that final step, and you have to go through so many interim steps where you've got sort of little mini pincers or something that's half a pincer and half not a pincer. Do you know what I mean? To evolve to pincer.
Oh, I've got a question about this, right? And I wonder whether, because we've got listeners who, from all walks of life, right? We've got Antarctic station people. We've got a lot of science people.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got a question about this very thing. So, you know, there's those fish that are in the bottom of the sea, flat fish, like skates. No, not skates. Like plaice. No, not plaice.
Plaice.
Yeah.
Place.
Dover sole.
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
Yeah.
And they've kind of evolved to have two eyes on one side of their head, and they kind of swim sideways along the bottom, so that the sides has become the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And their eye, I believe the phrase is, has migrated.
Yes.
From the underside to the other side.
Yeah.
But as you say, these things take millions of years. So does that mean that there was an interim period where they were just dragging their eye along the bottom of the floor for like millions of years, and then it slowly made its way around?
Maybe.
Because that's
maybe
not...
There was. Maybe their offspring had a nice little handy mutation, you know, where it budged along a bit. And that guy did a bit better.
But I would genuinely like to know, can a scientist tell me that, please? Please email
him. Is the seabed covered in eyeballs that have been rubbed off?
Well, it would have been horrible.
No, but it's true, because if there's no advantage until the point where the eyeballs got round the other side...
Exactly.
What is the advantage of the eyeball getting there? Because it's not as if evolution doesn't work on the basis of it's not like a traditional workflow in an office where you come up with a project plan and a, you know, it's not like, well, look, you know, the
guy's
going
to
get around
the eyeballs.
We need to get these eyeballs moving big time, people. Okay. So here's the plan. If you look at the PowerPoint slide 2, we become flat. We lie against the bottom of the ocean floor. Both eyes are round on the top. This means that...
This is madness, Nigel.
Oh,
this will never work.
Oh, there's all the groans. Oh, no, I'll come off it. Oh,
come on, mate.
It'll be an all bloody weekend on this.
What will the shareholders make of this?
I'm supposed to go to a wedding.
I am a vertical fish. You want me to turn into a horizontal fish? You're losing it. You've lost it, mate. How often, if at all, do either of you spend explaining what a podcast is to your parents?
Is that zero, I would say. I think they're fully on board.
Are they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I every so often I try again to define it to them. So one metaphor I've tried to use is...
You've already fallen there at the first hurdle, trying to use a metaphor.
Yeah, I think it sounds like you're the problem. I don't think it needs metaphors.
What I've tried to say is... I'm trying to say that basically a podcast is...
Imagine radio is a pig and podcast is a horse.
I've basically tried to say that it's like essentially it's like a sonic book.
That's an audio book.
Oh, shit, yeah.
So that's why they subscribe to Audible and can't find us there.
I've tried to say that it's like a book in the sense that it... Whereas a radio is like a town crier who's... emitting stuff live, whereas a book is on the shelf. You can pick it up whenever you want. You can put it back. But so that I've evolved. Last time I talked to them a couple of days ago, I thought I clinched it, which is the main thing about podcast is it can't be live. I was trying to explain the concept of Joe Rogan.
Although there are live podcasts.
Well, that's the thing. So I was like, it can't be live. But then...
In that way, it's a lot like a virus.
And then I went, and then I had to go, except for things like In Our Time with Melvin Bragg, which is live at the point of broadcast, but then it becomes a podcast. So then I had to say, then I thought, say, actually, at the moment that Melvin Bragg says, and next week we'll be discussing octopuses, goodbye, at that moment it becomes a podcast. As soon as it's not live anymore. That's not really true either, though.
So they think a podcast is now anything in which Melvin Bragg has stopped speaking.
Yes, it's broadened the definition for them quite dangerously wide. But I suppose in a way it's a bit like a book that's being dictated. So while it's live, it's being dictated to someone, then it stops being dictated. They finish writing it, it's now a book, it's now a podcast. But you can be there at the dictation if you want, if you listen to it live. Sort of. Again... We're 10 years after the birth. we're 10 years after the birth of a new medium, aren't we? We're still trying to work out what it is.
I think either way, let's all spare a thought for Henry's parents.
Maybe they're doing a podcast. I don't know. I think I might have been guesting on their podcast.
What was your take on Spider-Man? I'm not seeing any of your original 80s series.
it was like the sort of Daniel Craig version of Bond, really.
Okay. So muscular.
So it was
very much a muscular middle-aged schoolboy, wasn't it?
Very bit haggard. Very much a lot of the action done in camera. Slightly more gore going on. A bit more grounded, less swinging about. And more sort of elbowing people in the nose.
And one of the big differences they had in the mythology was that in your version, the human version of Spider-Man didn't just have the powers of sonar and stuff and the power that spiders have to sort of swing around the streets on long bits of web.
Yeah, he had a car phone as well.
He had a car phone. And
he was friends with the Human League.
He had a car phone and he'd be calling up the Human League and saying, do you want to meet up and do a gig later? And they'd be like,
go and solve some crime.
And they'd be like, no, we have a tour operator, we have a manager who sorts out our tours. Like, no worries, but see you later.
Yeah, which was a story I thought would be a story that people really got behind, but people got fed up with it pretty quickly. So
yeah. But the other thing, of course, was that your human character also had the eight eyes, didn't it, for Spider?
Yeah.
And I think that didn't go well with focus groups, but they kept it in. People don't like, they find it hard to relate to a character with eight eyes, don't they? I think that...
Eight eyes and eight legs? Yeah.
And eight legs, yeah. Well, your character had eight legs and two arms. which was confusing, wasn't it? Because it's hard to know. This is a problem, actually, with all
animals. Well, it's because we had to, at a very low budget, we had to borrow an old sort of Doctor Who outfit that we'd nicked from some studios and just had to adapt that.
Yeah.
And hence the leg issue.
Yeah.
I didn't think people would notice. But I was a toddler at the time.
That's the trouble with being a child star, isn't it? It can hang over you a bit. It has been your defining role in a way, hasn't it, Mike?
It's no childhood. You know.
Yeah. Because you had to spend how many hours a day having those eight legs grafted on?
It was 14 hours a day. It's mostly the time was being... that much time spent in a harness under tension, dangling from the ceiling, causes all sorts of growth troubles.
Mm. Well, you're bollocks now. It's just like two rotten acorns, isn't it?
And of course, the idea that the kid, because Peter Parker in your version was at school, was trying to sort of get through high school
as a toddler.
As an eight-legged toddler, well, as an eight-legged toddler with a moustache and eight eyes.
We did, of course, dear listeners. I'm sure you remember discuss the thorny issue of slippers, and definitively so to such an extent that we've got spare slipper chat right here, shining golden, gilded extra slipper bean chat. I had, at school, we had a geography teacher called Mr. who, in the 90s, even though corporal punishment had long been illegal, if you cheesed him off, he'd summon you to his little office and he'd give you a choice of either like a series of detentions. It would be an unfeasible number of detentions, like 10 detentions or whatever, or at which point he would produce his trusty old slipper. You could
seriously.
You could just let him beat your ass for a bit.
No way.
And it was made very clear that was the deal. It was also made very clear that exchange should remain between the two people involved.
Bloody Mike, hell. Every time you've brought up any memory from your school days,
yeah.
It's like a dossier of evidence that you should be taking to the Home Office.
But the thing is, I know I on at least a couple of occasions I did agree to the corporal punishment.
Well, it's better than the detention.
And I know all my friends that were in the same position, they did the same. They took the beats.
That's quite an interesting thing.
In the heat of the moment, rather than spending like being late out of school or no lunch times or whatever. 10 hours of your life. You just
and what was the slipper sort of made of? What was the texture?
It's very old slipper. It was a bold barbed wire.
World War One slipper.
It was the old slipper on a bat.
Electric barbed wire slipper. That's right. Some of the earliest taser technology had been implanted within it. Yeah.
Was it like a sort of old man slipper?
Yeah, old man slipper. But still with a degree of I think it sort of had the consistency of, what do they call them? Is it a black jack? Do you know what I mean? Like a cosh.
Like a cosh, yeah.
Yeah, so it lost a bit of integrity, so there was a bit of flop to it, flop and swing, to add a bit to the belting, but also enough consistency that you felt the impact.
And would he have worn that slipper, or is that a slipper? Is it just a slipper by name? It's something you purchase.
He didn't seem like the kind of man to me that would expressly purchase an item for anything if he could.
Okay.
Yeah, if he could use an old something he'd had lying around the house. Yeah.
I'm sorry you went through that.
Well, still decent set of GCSEs.
Exactly. Exactly. Although it may come as no surprise that I didn't select geography.
No.
Yeah.
But that's for the best, though, because it's kind of not a real subject, I don't think.
I got out. I mean, that was the point when I got out. I had to do it for the first couple of years. And then, you know, I thought, well, if I keep going with geography, I obviously irritate this man because he'd bollock me, not infrequently. I'm just going to get a hiding on my ass every term. Otherwise, yeah, I'll do history instead. Thanks very much. See you later, Mr.
Geography's not real. It's not.
It's not real colouring thing. In.
It is just looking at maps and, nah, it's not real.
Yeah, I'm not going to rise to the defence of geography because of Mr.
So really, it was kind of productive.
Well, maybe any geographers, you know, that listen could stand up for themselves.
They're welcome to try.
Get in touch.
Isn't it that geography in school is an unholy mix of basically other disciplines? So it's slightly geology, which I think is real.
Mm-hmm.
It's slightly sociology, which I think is real.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes.
It's slightly...
A bit of anthropology.
Maybe, exactly. But it's not a thing of its own. It's like
and
a,
rivers.
And Oxbow Lakes.
Are you trying to tell me that the way in which a river deposits sediment hasn't been important to you in your life, knowing that?
Well, no, it hasn't.
No. Yeah,
right. Are you trying to stand up for geography, Henry? Is that what you're trying to do?
Not really, because it's true that you're... I'm thinking about what you're saying. It's true that you never, like, get an expert on the news going, and now we're talking to a geographer. You know, you never hear that, do you?
They don't exist.
It's like there aren't geographers.
No, because it's not a real thing.
One good way to prove whether something's a real discipline or not, I think, is to do the action film test, which is, could you imagine an action film where they go, we're going to need a geographer?
Would Gerard Butler or Mark Wahlberg appear as a geographer?
Could they appear in a film called The Geographer?
The Geographer.
We're going to need a geographer.
Because Google Maps is shut down. For
Google
a few
Maps
minutes,
shut down.
They'll probably be up again in a couple of minutes, but yeah.
Yeah, the assailants are attacking the White House.
We're not sure what type of glacier they're currently making good their escape over.
But we know they're getting away quite slowly.
We think they're still on the Earth's crust, but we're not completely sure.
Because you could definitely have a film called The Historian.
Yeah,
I think so.
And you could definitely have a film called The RE Teacher.
That's clear.
Okay, time to turn on the bean machine. And also thanks to, I can't remember who it was, sent me an email this week, or maybe it was a message on Twitter saying they'd bought a new steam mop.
Oh.
Which every time they use it, the phrase, turn on the steam machine, comes to mind.
Changing lives.
Changing
one
lives.
At a time. We always said, you know, whatever happens with this podcast, if just one person gets a decent, really bloody decent steam mop, it's all
going to
be worth it.
Yeah. And it's good to know that someone is still burning the flame for the steam mop, isn't it, as an invention, because it don't think it's changed the world.
I've certainly never heard of one before.
I used one only yesterday.
Did you?
Really? A steam mop? So it's exactly the same as a mop.
Hot steam spews out and rises up directly into the hands and face of the moppist.
It's a use of Victorian sort of technology then, is it? So pistons and
You've got
stuff.
Your partner shoveling coal into a furnace.
Which powers
boils
the pistons.
The water, which has got to be underneath the floor you're mopping, presumably.
Yeah, so in the basement, that's for the people stoking the flames.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you go... Like that heavy industry, quite frightening.
And presumably, you're offsetting all of that by above the mop. You've got some sort of turbine, have you, on your chest or your belt that's powering your iPod?
Well, no, we offset it by planting trees. So every minute we steam mop, we have to plant 400 trees.
Okay.
And then by the time they become mature pines, it will all be balanced out.
Okay.
So does the steam come out of
Where doesn't the steam come out of, Henry?
Is it basically looking a child would look at it and go, that mop is furious. It looks like a very angry mop.
The steam comes out the bottom of the mop.
Okay.
So the hot steam hits the surface you're mopping as you're mopping.
So presumably you've got a lot of warping and stuff will happen in the floor.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, our cheap laminate floors are taking an absolute battering off the steam mop.
It comes away every time.
And is it a soap-free system? Is it the idea that you're simply using physics, like the a hard, because obviously, as we know, we've discussed this before, I think there's two philosophies on cleaning, isn't there? There's soap,
which is chemistry, and steam, which is
chemistry, and steam, which is physics, or biology, which is those little fish that eat
which but are a bloody nightmare. When I've tipped a bucket of them off over the kitchen floor in the past,
they're a bloody nightmare.
You've then got to clean up the tiny fish. They do eat all the crud, bits of spaghetti.
They always just make a beeline for your feet, don't they?
They always make a beeline for your feet. Mm. So you need to convince them that your laminate floor is a foot.
Yeah, which is why we have a sort of foot motif on our on our lino these days.
Yeah.
Of sort of middle-aged men's sort of quite horny feet.
Yeah.
Calloused.
And you've got middle-aged men's feet motif in your curtains, haven't you? Wallpaper. See, everything now, isn't it?
That's why Mike's got 2 feet tattooed into his armpit.
So you just and there's little fish, you just let them go, don't you? And they clean everything. You just, what do you do?
We don't let them go. They do their job and then we griddle them.
Imagine they taste pretty earthy. You know, you get quite an earthy fish.
Oh, it's hard work.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Bony. Cartilagey.
Yeah. Keeps you regular.
God.
By the way, I think this happens to everyone once in their life. They go, at some point in your life, someone will offer you some sort of steam device as an alternative to ironing. Has that happened to either of you yet?
Yes, and
hang on, an iron is a steam device.
Oh, but he means something other than an iron. He means
like a steam gun.
What are they called?
Yeah, that kind of thing.
A sort of steam gun, because obviously there's a whole steamist
a device that doesn't need doesn't need a board, basically.
Yeah, well, it's like you basically hang your shirt up and you sort of take the steam gun out and you just shoot it.
Mm.
Essentially, it's the closest you'll ever get to feeling like you're shooting the ghost of yourself. You sort of like, you get like a suit or, you hang
this
up.
This is great, this sort of stuff, because there's not many podcasts you can go to where you might be hearing about something that you only heard of for the first time 6 years ago.
Yeah, exactly. It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Keep it fresh. We may haven't got time to discuss it now, but steamism is that I think there's a whole sort of community, isn't it, that people that think that steam is a solution to things. So steam mops, steamers as an alternative to irons,
steam televisions.
It's the idea that basically, because we talked about there's two philosophies.
Well, eventually we'll just end up, we'll all just be wearing steam, won't we? Eventually.
If you're covered in hot enough water particles, you can arrange them to look like a suit and tie, to look like a...
That won't crease.
Because it's pre-steamed, because it is steamed. And, instead of watching TV, you just fire hot steam at your eyes. And essentially, if you can control the micro-temperature, the micro-temperatures of those steam particles, you can adapt it so that essentially... To an outside, it looks like you're just having steam on your eyes. But from your point of view, you're watching...
Platoon.
You're watching Platoon. Because that's all technology is, isn't it? It's ones and zeros. It's just,
It's steam and not steam.
It's steam and not steam. It's a perfectly valid system, potentially.
Well, they say, don't they, if you look at a cloud, your mind will begin to paint... images onto the cloud. You'll see faces, you'll see animals, that kind of thing. Very similar when someone's firing hot steam into your eyes, you'll very quickly begin to create a narrative.
Well, and you end up actually the same happens with clouds, you'll end up watching the Platoon you want to watch. So in your version of Platoon,
happy ending,
it's got John Candy in it.
It's good. John Candy hosts a series of reparations and peace talks.
Yeah, and they come to a diplomatic solution. It's just something to watch out for, is just, I think, the steamism, because you might be at a wedding, at a party, a barbecue, on a train, and you'll have a problem and you'll start talking to someone about it, and someone will lean across and go, have you been listening to that problem you've been describing with your...
divorce.
Just long story, it sounds like you're getting divorced, but you're very good friends with her parents still, and you've actually developed a bond there, which you think might outlast the divorce, but you're worried that... If the divorce is messy, there's a little legal ramifications. Mm. Well, just long story short, have you considered using steam? Now, hear me out. Since pre-medieval times, steam has been used to get people from A to B.
As a currency.
As a currency. To get people up and down. As a way of decreasing shirts.
Is it your contention that in pre-medieval times they were using steam to get around?
Well, people doing things off their own steam, Ben. Where do you think that phrase?
This section was an ad placed by the British Steam Council. Because Britain was built on steam. It was, wasn't it?
It was. Basically, heat up enough water in a small compartment and it'll get pistons going like the bejesus.
Well, as we know, the beam machine is steam-powered.
Yep,
In part, yes.
In part. I mean, yes, it's got its own nuclear reactor, of course, and it's...
Yeah. But it's green steam and it's intelligent steam, isn't it? It's very, very modern. This is steam that... don't have people, you know, you'll have people tell you steam very old-fashioned. You picture people with big moustaches shoveling coal. Yes, there is a man with a big moustache shoveling coal.
As we speak on this podcast.
And the fact that he can maintain such a smooth, relaxed voice while shoveling coal is one of the reasons he's such a remarkable person. But no, this is very much steam with a modern twist, isn't it, Ben? It's not...
This is digital nano steam.
It's non-fungible steam.
It's non-fungible steam. Yeah, this is steam which says, let's pop a craft ale, sit on a beanbag, and
watch some netball.
And watch some netball, yeah. You know, when it comes to cramming quite a lot of stuff into a small, contained, pouch-like area?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It's how people often refer to podcasts, yeah? As an audio pouch.
Well, that happens with a couple of things, doesn't it? It happens with podcasts, and it also happens with middle-aged men who are getting into their cycling shorts.
Oh.
And what happens with the spare stuff that doesn't fit in? Well, in the case of a middle-aged man, that'll take the form of a fleshy bit of bollock, which might stick out the side. A bit of arse that might get compressed and poke out the top.
At the top of the neck?
Why are you scratching your neck so much, Keith? That's not my neck. I've got piles, you fool. It's my arse. Oh, sorry, Keith.
Builder's neck.
Listeners, it is not medically advised to scratch piles. Don't scratch piles.
Especially if they're up by your neck.
What are you supposed to do with piles? With piles, I mean, Mike?
What am I supposed to do
medical
with my piles?
With Mike Wozniak. What are you supposed to do with piles?
What are you supposed to do with piles? Just leave it.
You could manage conservatively initially and just improve the fibre in your diet and your hydration. You used to ban them back in the day. If they're really bad, you might need a full-blown operation.
Oh, God.
You know what? I had piles once, right, and I looked online, and it told me to do a thing that's called something like a spritz bath or
right.
something. Do you know about this, Mike? You fill the bath. You're supposed to fill the bath with like 3 inches of water.
With sparkling tonic wine.
And then you're supposed to sit in it for like an afternoon.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And gradually it softens everything up and everything becomes just quite a lot softer.
And then you can do what? Take them off with a blade.
And then everything does just
a wooden
soft.
Spatula will do by then.
Yeah.
Come away clean, like porridge from the and side it, of a...
like God. Cleaning off the dry bits of porridge
from the side of the pan.
Excellent, brand new non-stick pan.
Got a new non-stick arse.
Did you do it?
No, I didn't in the end, actually, because I thought about it, though. It's called, I think it's called a sitz bath, S-I-T-Z.
Oh.
A sitz bath is a warm, shallow bath that cleanses.
Do I have to wait to have piles before I can have one of these baths? Can I just do it anyway?
Very dangerous to do it if you don't have piles.
I think that could be dangerous. So this is from a website. A sitz bath is a warm, shallow bath that cleanses the perineum, which is the space between the rectum and the vulva or scrotum. A sitz bath can also provide relief from pain or itching in the genital area.
Hang on, is this an actual product? Is this like a sort of bucket you put your arse in? They're not just saying just sit in the bath. You just don't need to run it very much.
No, you. I think you can buy.
You buy an arse bucket.
I assume is a kidney bean shaped, because most medical products are, as a kidney bean shaped bath, which you can buy and sit in, or you can just do it in your own bath.
But if you buy the unit, then you can do it and you can sit in your living room while you soak your ass and watch the telly.
Well, you can interact with your grandchildren.
You don't have to miss out on that Sunday roast. All those theatre tickets you saved up for.
Yeah.
Or your knighthood.
That you bloody well earned. Why should you? And if you turn around, the Queen might even lop off the offending extrusion for you.
Already sharpened rapier.
So it says here, you can also give yourself a sitz bath in your bathtub or with a plastic kit that fits over your toilet.
Or why not just have a bath?
Yeah, it's just two beds with one stone, isn't it? Does that literally have
a bath? It's not like your anus will only heal if only it is being attended to. It's kind of a attentional hugging.
But it is a jealous body part.
Oh, but it is. It has to give away so much.
The green-eyed ass will not tolerate fair treatment to other parts.
Anyway, this is an introduction, isn't it?
Yeah. So we should let them listen to the stuff.
Yeah, so here's some extra stuff from the bicycles episode.
I should apologise now because I think quite near me that there is a mason at work.
Okay.
Which may intrude.
So,
some heavy-duty artisanal workers.
I forgot that you'd moved into the nave of a cathedral.
There's just the most extraordinary sort of screaming, soaring sounds. The saw is really struggling. And I was out and about earlier on and there's quite a lot of sort of stone dust being spewed forth from someone's back garden. So I think they've got the masons in. Yeah.
It's the worst sound, I think, isn't it? No to man is soaring stone.
It's not meant to be sawn.
It's not meant to be sawn. It's got no grain. The molecules just don't allow for it. You know, it's not. It just goes against everything.
It's meant to be bashed, chucked, chiselled at most.
You can kosh people with it. You can hurl it. You can hurl it off cliffs.
It can be slowly eroded by the sea. That's fine.
It can be rolled off a thing.
Yeah.
Ideally not onto anybody, but onto something, certainly.
Yeah, yeah.
Into an abyss.
It can be sort of slowly rolled. It can be slowly pushed by two explorers to open up the mouth of an old sort of overgrown ancient tomb.
Yeah. Ooh, woe betide them, though.
Woe betide them. But it makes a great sound. That stone on stone makes a sound, which is like...
Oh, yeah.
Is it? No.
Yes,
no,
that's the one. Yeah.
Well, I think that's an espresso machine.
Put that in the sound library, Ben.
Yeah.
Foley artist Henry Packer.
It was...
sound effects to the blockbuster movies of the world.
That would be good if they make another Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
That's going to get a lot of
use. It was huge in those films, that sound.
Well, because what happens is, it's the sound you get when... You know, in a film where there'll be like a stone door that somehow then just goes up, like a sort of... Like an automatically opening door that just goes up. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? By this... And it always makes that same sound. Henry, give us the sound.
Is that right?
Oh, it's like I'm there.
Yeah. But in reality, it would have to have some level of motors going on, right?
Which you don't hear. Very quiet motors.
No, exactly.
Also, the kind of technology that's being invoked by the movements you see. So we're talking about arrows being shot out of cave walls, that kind of thing, yeah? chessboard-style floors, which have descending squares that trigger different...
Yeah, they've got some wobbly floorboards and stuff and splinters and things for intruders.
Exactly. But what they'd have to do to get those to work without using modern technology, the level of detail, they'd have to be like weaving tiny little sort of threads around little sticks that would fall onto balls and little, I don't know, what kind of technology, you know what I mean? They haven't got...
Yeah, or they've got sort of 4,000 recently captured enemy people.
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
It's lining the walls.
Yeah. It's an army of captives, isn't it?
But they do. Yeah, they've got to put supplies in that are going to last them a very long time, generations.
Yeah.
In fact,
yeah, Yeah.
It's a logistical bloody nightmare.
So generation after generation, they're just waiting in case someone actually unearths this tomb.
Yeah, in 4,000 years' time.
In 4,000 years' time, they've got to be there just in case. To trigger the
The stairs that turn into it, they turn into a slide.
Stairs.
They go smooth.
And they run drills, presumably. They're going to get bored. Presumably, they run drills, make sure when it's quiet on the quiet days.
Yeah.
Well, sometimes if like a pigeon gets in, they're delighted. Because suddenly it's like a.
Oh, they absolutely love that.
Dress rehearsal. That
pigeon is toast.
Yeah, the stair slide. They've got to maintain the skulls and stuff that are skewered on the spears that show evidence of previous people that have died. Those have to be maintained. They can't, because they can't decay too much. They need to be recognisable.
Well, they've got to make sure that the cobwebbing level is just right so that you can see that there's a skeleton there. So it's not covered in cobwebs, completely obscured, but there are clearly cobwebs. They've been there for a while.
It's a very similar skill set to people that do the windows at Selfridges and Harrods and the big shop, the big shops around Christmas. You'll see them draping fake snow and stuff. It's very similar.
That's where they mostly recruit from, I think.
Yeah, and that's why, and to recruit those people, I mean, that's why they're called headhunters, isn't it? Because you actually have to. It's quite hard.
And you'll know, Henry. You know, you've worked in this. You're an artist. Yeah. Sometimes a head can shrink too much when you're trying to create those kind of effects.
Well, exactly. You've got to get it to shrink just the right amount.
Yeah, if it's got down to Pez dispenser, then you've got to start all over again.
Well, you try and rehydrate it, and you're in an absolute mess.
Yeah, but the chances of rehydrating it evenly are very, very unlikely to get that right. So what you'll do is you'll end up with...
Yeah, you'll get soggy jowls, all kinds.
Soggy jowls, and you'll get unintended facial expressions as well. So, like, they don't look as scary if they're sort of grinning or winking, that kind of thing. Mm. They need to look sort of terrified.
You'll have a sort of half-sized wry head, which is no good.
You don't want that wry look.
Cheeky head.
Arch. Again, not expressions that you need in that situation.
You certainly can't have smugness being a...
You don't want that.
Smugness coming across from someone who's been skewered by a spike.
What you want is just that look of being, of just utterly vanquished, isn't it? That's how they look. Mm. Just like, oh, God, he's vanquished me. And then you freeze that, you shrivel it down and you wear that. Well, it was the equivalent to your CV, wasn't it?
That you wear around your neck.
A shaman's necklace.
Yeah. You wear your CV around your, on a lanyard around your neck back in the day.
You wear your CV.
What kids don't realise these days.
So these days you go, you know, I've done some internships. I'm confident with the Word program. I can use tabs. confident around tabbing. I know how to paginate. I can do page numbers.
I've got grade 5 flute.
I've got grade 5 flute. And my interests include the cinema and France. But in those days, it was a bunch of just sort of dry shriveled old faces of people that you'd vanquished.
I've done in a conquistador.
Yeah. I've done in a conquistador's wife.
These guys are pilgrims.
this one on the end, she was a suspected witch. Just leave it at that, long story, but a suspected witch. and this is my brother-in-law Steve, who had it coming.
And this guy was carrying out extensive car insurance fraud, so I think he had it coming. Just slam the brakes on at a roundabout into the back of him. Whiplash, he calls it. Whiplash. Yeah. Well, how come he was playing golf on the weekend? Jungle golf. You know when they talk about the tombs of the Egyptian pharaohs?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And there's the idea that they are booby-trapped. Yeah. Mm. Now, is that just a complete myth? Or is it true that I'm beginning to think is wrong, but this is what I previously thought, that kind of Victorian characters had tried to go into these tombs and had ended up with the stairs turning into a smooth slide.
And they go, whoa!
And then the walls closing in and all that.
I think it was more about curses. They were more preoccupied with curses rather than booby traps, weren't they, the Victorians, on the whole?
Well, but what about the Egyptians?
Well, the Egyptians, I think it was important that, you know, if you don't want someone to be able to access a tomb, say, in the future, it's important that you set up a series of difficult, not impossible, but difficult, you know, head scratchers, physical challenges.
Sudokus.
Sudokus. And that's where, obviously, board games and stuff come from. You know, it's the other way around. So snakes and ladders, obviously, you would have had to have literally gone up ladders and
slid down snakes.
And slid down snakes to get to the end point, which would be, you know, gaining access to an ancient tomb.
But you could argue, couldn't you, that if your main thing was to stop people going into your tomb, maybe don't put it inside a gigantic pyramid that everyone on Earth wants to go and see.
Oh, maybe that's a. But maybe they were decoy pyramids.
So is it possible that the real pharaohs were actually just sort of are all buried actually like in sort of Wiltshire or something?
If you walk around an old country church, the majority of the people buried there, it'll say their name was sort of John Wilkins.
Yeah. Beloved husband.
You know, buried with his wife, Marjorie Wilkins. No.
It's actually Ramesses the 17th.
Yeah, exactly.
A huge hoard of gold. Right. Well, get digging, dear listeners. Get out there.
I'm not sure that's a good idea that we
instigate a mass grave digging. Maybe not. Use your judgment.
There is one thing that happened, isn't it, when they went into Tutankhamun's tomb, I believe, which is, it's not exactly a kind of spear coming out of the wall and shattering through your ear or whatever.
Some uneven paving slabs.
You could really put, you know, you could sprain an ankle. It could affect your croquet quite badly.
If you're osteoporotic as well, then you could really do yourself a serious mischief.
And also, they didn't have the falling down into the sort of into the room of upward spikes.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't have that.
You'd fall up into the room of downward spikes.
Falling up, that's harder to pull off. The one where they just release a chicken into the room. Just to bamboozle you, see what happens. Well, they have to allow for various different superstitions as well. Because for some people, a chicken running into the room will mean you've got to go home right now. Sorry, this is not happening.
And some people are just scared of chickens.
No, but what they did have was, when they opened the tomb of Tutankhamun, they peered in. The air hadn't moved for over 1,000 years. And the flowers that were laid out, had been sat there.
And the last fart of the high priest of Tutankhamun
still hung in the air.
Shouldn't have had that date loaf.
Shouldn't have had that scarab brulee. So who was the guy that discovered it all? Who went in?
It was Edmund Hillary, wasn't it?
No, it wasn't Edmund Hillary.
he just gambled on straight past it. He rambled up the top and down again and didn't even consider what he might be walking over the top of, that it might be man-made.
That's right. I think it was Sir Randolph Huntington.
Huntington Hurst.
Sir Huntington Hurst.
Jeff Hurst.
With Jeff Capes.
Yeah, so apparently the flowers were there in the air. Mm. No, not in the air, in the vase.
Yeah.
And they hadn't moved for, you know, thousands of years or whatever, because the air hadn't been disturbed. And then they just crumpled. they turned to powder in front of him.
Oh.
So it was more a kind of psychological sort of obstacle of like, ooh, dare you continue? Having felt the symbolism of those flowers turning to dust.
And then he thought, I do dare continue.
Yeah.
I'm going to parade this body around the world for the next 20 years.
I'm going to make a bloody packet out of this.
Let's do it.
Going to ransack the hell out of this.
Don't mind those bloody peonies.
Yeah.
Let's get on with it.
Let's get ransacking.
But Mike, you mentioned that the curse. Was there a curse?
The thing is, every time I've read something or listened to something about this, I've always ended up being quite disappointed because I want there to be a curse. I think the last thing I read was suggesting, because quite a few of them died, didn't they? And they...
Is that because they're Victorians?
They say, Mike, that everyone on that day eventually died.
Well, they did. Well, some of them died, you know, 22, and only 22 years later he was dead.
For the curse of Tutankhamun knows no sleep. It'll wait you out. It'll wait till you're on your very deathbed.
It'll wait until you're 97 years old and your 60 cigarette a day habit.
That precise moment that your lungs collapse anyway. He'll be there.
Yeah. There was the suggestion that possibly, actually, that newspapers might be quite behind it. I think the guy who, whatever his name was, Jeff Capes, let's say.
Yeah.
I think he might have even had an exclusive deal with the Times of London or one of the other
come off
newspapers.
It. Are you joking?
And the rival newspapers were very cheesed off about this. And so they then went down a tack of saying, here's a good idea. Why don't we say there's a curse and that asps are creeping out of people's toilets and biting them on the willy.
Oh, you're joking.
And that really got a bit of heat from the British public. They loved it. And so that story took hold. That is my understanding. Almost certainly wrong. I've almost certainly missed nuance. I bet we've got a listener who knows exactly what the deal is.
It seems that on every subject we have someone who has a PhD exactly, in that subject who will then email us.
By the way, I've Googled who it was. It was Howard Carter.
Howard Carter.
Oh. I literally never heard that name
it's
in my life.
It's a disappointing name. Let's say, presumably he's got at least seven middle names, at least, please.
You'd hope so, wouldn't you? It's quite a normal, yeah.
Nebuchadnezzar.
Brandenburg.
Carbuncle.
That's a disappointing name, isn't it?
It's a disappointing name.
It's disappointing.
Howard Carter. He was an Egyptologist. Quite cool, that, isn't it?
I think I thought I'd be an Egyptologist when I was a small boy. Although that probably was just because of kind of Tintin books and Indiana Jones. Didn't really think it through.
Yeah.
I think I sort of wanted to be an archaeologist until the reality of it became clear.
Yeah, it's so much. It's basically just dusting, isn't it?
Just dust, it's brushing the floor.
Yeah, dusting and brushing.
Yeah. Here are your knee pads. Yeah. Here's a tiny brush. Please be careful.
And here's Tony Robinson.
Here's Tony Robinson.
And if you do this for 20 years and you get really good at it, we'll give you an even smaller brush. You get the really mini brush. Yeah. Just look forward to that. Real detailed brushing you'll be good at then. You'll be able to do that. You know, a few points in your life, you will decide that you're going to cycle. You're going to cycle. That's going to be your way of getting around. And it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's happened to me three times, I think, including recently. I had one where I was like, I had yet another I'm going to cycle around epiphany. I was like, I'm going to cycle around. Of course. Because it's exercise and you're getting from A to B. How many other exercises can you say that about? Running, cycling, swimming.
Tennis, no. Rowing, possibly.
Football to a degree.
Javelin, if you are attached to the javelin.
Snorkeling.
It's a rare commuter's choice.
God, doing the old bloody snorkel to work every bloody day. Gets you down, doesn't it? Every day, the same old blowfish. The same old bloody moray staring me down at 9 a.m. every day. I'm sick of it. You know what I mean? Oh.
Same old bloody banker bloke with his harpoon knocking about, making a fuss.
Absolute
nightmare.
But at least I'm not on the bus.
Well, they say, you know, you do it, you think, I'll read a novel on the way to work. But actually,
I'll write a novel.
Do you know how hard it is to write a novel while snorkeling? They don't tell you that, do they?
But somehow Robert Peston did it. I'm always really dubious of these people like Robert Peston who seemingly have a very important job. Who managed to knock out a novel on the train to work. Mm. A lot of MPs will do this.
Yeah. That's a good point.
But you have to sort of be in the Westminster bubble to somehow manage to do it. I'm not quite sure what's going on there.
I've never managed to do that much work of any kind on a train.
Or anywhere, personally.
Or on a non-train.
Yeah.
Anyway, you decided you were going to cycle.
Yeah. It sort of hit me in an afternoon. I was sitting at my desk and I had one of those moments where I was like, I'm going to cycle everywhere, of course. And I'm going to start now. Now, obviously, I knew I couldn't cycle to the shop where I was going to buy the bike.
Curses.
I knew that wasn't going to be possible. Yeah. But I
could at least put the helmet on.
At least put the helmet on, and I could adopt the pose.
Mm-hmm. You could indicate.
I could indicate. But I went online and I was like, I found a bicycle shop open. Decathlon. Do you know about that shop?
No.
Yeah. You don't know Decathlon?
Decathlon is the most incredible shop.
Yeah.
Okay, imagine...
We don't have one in Exeter.
So Decathlon is not just a bike shop.
No. No. It's a sports omni store, isn't it?
Okay.
It's a French sports omni store.
It's a French sports omni store.
Come and buy yourself an inflatable canoe and also an exercise bike and also a tent.
Competitive tenting.
And have change from £5. It's incredibly cheap as well.
Yeah, it's so good.
It's like the internet. Imagine Amazon. Yeah, it's sort of like if the internet was actually a physical shop. Like everything's there. And
so imagine a shop.
Imagine if internet shopping was physicalized.
Yeah.
Because you can get everything, but it's all really cheap.
Oh.
But it's almost like it's easier because you're actually there. So you just go around grabbing stuff. But it's sort of like with the ease of shopping online, you go around grabbing stuff. But instead of a virtual shopping trolley, it's an actual shopping trolley. But, you know, or instead of a virtual
shopping... You were right, he's just describing it.
Instead of...
I think so, yeah.
instead of a small picture of a shopping basket, it's an actual shopping basket. Do you know what I mean? So imagine if you could physicalise.
And instead of online card fraud, the guy in front of you is actually literally doing it in front of you.
He's literally doing card fraud. It's old-fashioned analogue fraud.
Wow.
And that lovely feeling you get, which is so rare now, and it's like, you know, it's like when your knife goes through the crust of a handmade pie, and the meaty juices, you know, you start smelling that lovely feeling of actually of a man actually properly using his eyes to look over your shoulder as he takes down your PIN number, and you go, oh, I've been really lovely, lovely feeling that actually now.
Okay, so you're in this extraordinary place, this quote unquote shop.
Yeah. Decathlon. Yeah.
You can also buy things from Decathlon online, which it slightly confuses this.
Yeah. And also, it's not just sports from the Decathlon, is it?
Uh-huh.
If anything, it's more sports than you get in a Decathlon. It's everything.
Inflatable canoeing is not in the...
It's in the modern Decathlon, which is different. But I thought to myself, I'm going to get to Decathlon now. You know when you go, I have to do this now. It's now or never, Henry. You're going to become a cyclist today. And I basically had about 55 minutes to get to Decathlon before it was going to shut.
Mm.
I was like, I have to do this now. I need to be a cyclist. So I used public transport to get to Decathlon.
Mm.
And my plan was, I'm going to get to Decathlon by public transport and I'm going to come home a cyclist. Oh, I'm going to come home on a bike. And it's like the Spartans said, we went to battle, come home holding your shield or on your shield, which meant, if you don't win, come home dead, essentially.
And you were willing to...
That's the Decathlon motto, isn't it?
Are you willing to be carted back, draped across
an inflatable canoe?
Yeah.
Dead.
And I got to Decathlon, right? But I got it in my head, I've got to do this. I got to Decathlon.
Hmm.
Okay. It was in a shopping centre in Ealing.
Mm-hmm.
It was in a quite a grim old 70s. One of those shopping centres which feels completely decommissioned, but actually you can still buy a greetings card in there. There's still a few shops.
But there is also a fountain that's been switched off for 25 years.
Yeah. Exactly. Hmm. Almost all the units are empty.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple still going. For some reason, deep in this largely defunct shopping centre, there is a Decathlon that's still going.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to the Decathlon. Now, I knew it shut at 5. Now, I'm not going to say I was cutting it fine, but when I got there, they were not admitting people into the shop. And it was that point of lockdown where you could go into shops, but you were channeled round on a the one-way system was very much properly in action at that point. So there's one way in, one way out, right? And a man was stood there guarding the way in. And a position where I think I saw him talk to someone before me, you cannot get into the shop.
You explained to him that this was urgent. You had an epiphany.
He still wasn't interested. He said people have the cycling epiphany 14 or 15 times in their lifetime.
So just wait for the next one. Deal.
Just wait for the next one. It will be around soon enough. And what I did was I travelled all the way to Ealing. Right? I was ready to be absolutely furious.
Mm-hmm.
And when I'm furious, it's quite a sight. What happens is a sweat breaks out on my forehead. And I internalise all the anger. And what happens is there's a sort of crumpling in my face.
Mm-hmm.
A slight, barely perceptible crumpling happens.
Yeah. You age by a full year.
I age by a full year. And my internal organs all kind of shrink up together into a little ball because all of that energy is it's all focused in.
Mm-hmm.
And then they resume their former shapes, but slightly wonky.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought, I'm getting in this Decathlon. I'm going to get in this Decathlon. I'm going to buy a bike. This moment happened where he just looked away for a moment and I went in the out bit. Can I still be prosecuted for this by the police? And before he could look around, I was in and I was upstairs. It's a multi-level thing. It's huge.
And you were hitting him in the back of the head.
Coshing him on the back of the head with a very good value lacrosse baton.
Changing into his clothes.
I changed into his clothes. I yanked his facial hair off and stuck it onto myself with football
tape.
With football tape. I was using a football pump to inflate my cheeks.
So you could fit the bike in.
But anyway, I arrowed myself up the stairs. I could feel the sweat, by the way, on my forehead from the stress. But I knew that the way it works towards the end of a day in retail is once you started the transaction will go through. Mm. Even if it's, you know, a few minutes to or even a few minutes past five, I thought if I can start a transaction, the transaction will go through. So I got my ass up those stairs. People were leaving the shop. It was about 30 seconds to five. And I saw a staff member. He was Spanish. And I said, "I'm interested in buying a bike." And he looked at me and he could see his face crumple with his like, I was going to go home. And now, but he started the transaction and the Decathlon code says it must be finished. And about 35 minutes later, I cycled out of that Decathlon.
In triumph.
35 minutes of that poor man's unpaid time.
But it might not have been that long, but I had to make those purchases really under pressure, especially with the reflective top, because I was sticking this reflective top on. It was so tight. And I was like, I can't get this reflective top. I'm going to have to try another one on. The poor Spanish guy was standing. He looked so angry. I was trying on reflective top after reflective top. But once I'd started, I knew I was okay. And I got a bike, I got reflective outfit, I got a helmet, I got a bike lock, I got lights, I got everything.
Jousting stick.
Jousting stick for those busy commuting moments.
Little snowplow for the front.
I got the side panniers, the rear panniers, I got the bread basket.
Sidecar?
I got the sidecar.
The ear panniers.
I got the ear panniers, I got the upper deck.
And the kitchenette.
I got the kitchenette.
Basement swimming pool.
Basement swimming pool. Viewing lounge.
And rotating restaurant.
Rotating restaurant. Sunroof, sun floor, sun walls. Novel pouch. And an entirely functioning brasserie level kitchen, fully staffed.
Auditorium.
Auditorium.
And guest accommodation.
Guest accommodation. And cemetery. So the full life cycle. It's all
you've
there.
Got to have a mausoleum on a bike, haven't you?
You've got to have a mausoleum.
Put the security guard in it.
And the whole thing cost. Yeah, the whole thing came in at an excellent price.
Hey guys, do you remember when we talked about goblins? Guys, well, I remember.
I remember.
And I remember that we couldn't wang it all into the old episode.
Well, what we had to do was we had to, as with every episode, we have to, Mike does a goblin scene, which we then cut out of the podcast. Yep.
Which we do in every single one.
And this effectively is like you listening to the goblin scene.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which meant that we had most of the actual other content. We had to cut the other way around from the usual, wasn't it?
So normally all those tapes would be destroyed, so you should count yourselves as very, very privileged indeed.
Yeah.
Here we go.
So, Mike, what was your first goblin outing? Oh,
well, apart from those, it was a primary school adaptation of The Hobbit.
And that's, of course, where Francis Ford Coppola first saw you.
That's right. And, it was... The cool kids got cast as dwarves, I seem to remember. And the shorter and younger kids tended to get cast as hobbits. And the kids that... were either oddly sized or had bad teeth or in some way felt to be visually unpalatable, we became the goblins.
Oh, no.
And the elves were the pretty girls. Yes, that's right. It was very clearly done on visuals. I was very jealous of the hobbits, though. The hobbits, though, they were allowed to drink alcohol-free beer during the performance.
Whereas you were forced to drink the alcohol. Exactly. You guys had to be getting hammered.
We were on bourbon.
Yeah.
you were like, which we weren't ready for.
God. It was actually to sort of keep you semi-sedated.
Yeah, so we just had to be painted a bit green and put on a jerkin and then be killed by one of the dwarves. That was the role.
Is that different from an orc, by the way?
I don't remember the goblins in Lord of the Rings, to be honest.
I think you may have been cut out of this production, Rogue.
Yeah, yeah, I was cut out. Yeah, yeah.
Well, you cut out at the time, so just keep acting, but just a bit further towards the wings. No, just a bit further towards the wings. There you go, carry on.
I'm just waiting for there for 2 hours and your mum come and pick you up. Yeah, there were goblins. Orcs, I think orcs got a looking in The Hobbit.
Is that the Lord of the Rings?
Oh, I'm thinking Lord of the Rings. Maybe I've never actually...
Yeah, Hobbit's all mountain-dwelling goblins.
It's quite useful, isn't it, when you have school plays, that they choose plays which have large group characters. So
that's true. Although I think there was a level of conscription in this play. I think it was someone's grand vision. I think one of the teachers had done their own adaptation.
Good. Oh, wow.
That's always good.
So you were very much told... Because I didn't do play... I mean, that wasn't a thing, really. Certainly.
You were too busy learning how to fire a Sten gun, weren't you?
Exactly.
And lay mines.
Yeah.
What sort of age would that have been?
This is primary school. This is quite small. This is like 8 years old or something like that, I think. Mm-hmm. 8 or 9. Yeah, so it's pre my martial schooling experience.
Mm-hmm. And did you have lines as the goblin?
God, no. No, I think we had to sort of howl and scream a bit and squawk. But no, it was a very, very brief battle scene. I think we had to sort of shout from the wings to warn the dwarves of the oncoming horde, then run on, get killed, and then sort of work out how to get off the stage again without inconveniencing the next scene too much.
I remember I had a school play once where I had one line. It was Alan Ayckbourn, 40 Years On by Alan Ayckbourn. Yeah,
that sounds like absolute agony.
I had one line.
That's not to say anything against Alan Ayckbourn, but I think the idea of small children doing an Alan Ayckbourn
play... The idea of children doing it.
Is,
because they're largely about kind of middle-aged malaise.
Never get children to play it, to play Ayckbourn.
It's rule number
it's
one.
It's one of the first rules of theatre. You don't work with live birds and you don't get children trying to do an Ayckbourn. It's a joke. They can't handle the concepts. They can do Lear. They can do Shakespeare.
That's why he's deliberately moved to a town in the northeast where it's mostly retirees, I think.
Exactly.
Developing plays in a town with no children.
But I had a line which was, I had to offer somebody some biscuits.
Mm-hmm.
And
so you understood your motivation behind the line.
But why did he want to give the biscuits?
Looking back now, I'm trying to think, was I actually in the play or was I some sort of runner? They just told me I was in the play. Yeah, you're the character that has to give people biscuits during the rehearsal period. He's really important, though. I had to offer some biscuits to someone. They had to say, what biscuits are they? And I had to say, they're digestives. Mm-hmm. So...
Huge laugh.
Huge laugh. Standing whooping, ovation. Cheering. A lot of emotions, actually, with that line. Some people will be crying through the laughter.
Hats thrown at the ceiling, flowers thrown at the stage.
Yep.
Can you give us the line reading, Henry, as if you were there?
Well, here's the thing. It's sometimes, as an actor, it's actually working with less when you can deliver more. And also, it's even harder. You know, a long soliloquy, anyone can bash out a long soliloquy. You've got so many words in a row, you're bound to get a few of them right. You're bound to, it's just the law of averages. You're going to...
Yeah, there'll be the odd article that was definitely in the original speech.
Exactly.
Prepositions. Beyond that, it's gist, really, isn't it? What you're
it's
aiming
just
for.
Getting the gist. Also, the main thing, I mean, if you see most Henry V's, the fact that you're wearing a crown, you've got a big sword.
It says it all.
It does a lot of the work for you. And the fact that you can parade up and down, and you know, if you waggle that sword about while you're speaking, that kind of thing, these little tricks actors use.
Because often the actor actually, they'll lose their way in the soliloquy and just start reading out football scores, won't they? But nobody notices.
Audience can't tell.
So they've
done experiments on this. With the audience, what they are certain that they heard was the original speech from Shakespeare's play. And actually, what they got was the ingredients for Cocoa Pops.
Yeah.
Watford 3. West Point 0. Rangers 2. Celtic 1.
Well, there's some wonderful stories, though, aren't there, about when the guy who played Gandalf.
Cillian McKellen.
Steve McKellen. Yeah. Well, some wonderful stories, aren't there? Well, Steve McKellen and...
Judy Donch.
Steve McKellen, Judy Donch were on tour. And Judy Donch would read out that it was Antony and Cleopatra. Mm-hmm. And during the famous Let Rome in Tiber Melt soliloquy, I did it at A-level.
I was quite impressed. I really was. A-level.
She read out the scores, and of course Steve Donch. I mean Steve. Well, Steve was well, soon Steve to Donch, be Steve.
He was the stand-in, wasn't he?
Judy Dench's son.
Well, they had very similar bone structure, so he could come in and play her. And of course, anyone who's a real student of Shakespeare will know most parts were played by the different gender, but with a fake beard or fake dress, depending on which way around they were going.
That's right.
And they would have had Jeff Wanamaker playing the chaise long, but yep. being the prompt as well.
Exactly. Prompt at the same time. Mm. Exactly, because you want an on-stage prompt, don't you? Especially when you're doing rep.
You ideally want to be sitting on the prompt. You want to be that close.
You want the prompt to be as close as possible to the actor.
Yeah.
Especially doing rep. So that's why you got the whole thing of actors, people dressed up as shadows, didn't you?
Mm-hmm.
You'd have the prompt be dressed up as a shadow of Judy Donch. And they had to lie down on the stage and sort of scurry around.
Well, some of the best prompts were able to turn themselves into togas, of course, weren't they?
Yeah. So, but the point I'm making is Judy Donch knew that Steve McKellen was a Wolves fan. And of course, sometimes she'd read out the scores and deliberately get it wrong. So he thought the Wolves had lost, or they'd actually drawn. There's a story about that.
They had fun, didn't they?
They did have fun. Ah, wonderful days there, wasn't it? The mid to late 70s.
Peter B. Tool.
Peter B. Tool. Well, there's a wonderful story, isn't there, about how he...
Well, him and Peter Boustinoff used to shit into Pringles cans and then throw them into the audience, didn't they? Yeah. Thing.
They'd push Fred Guinness into oncoming cyclists.
Yeah. Ah, the life of an actor. Has that all gone? You know, there's that kind of, those actory people, they're now all of a certain age.
Mm.
And they lived in an era where, you know, it was all kind of lovely, long lunches, mainly lunches. Then a play, then another lunch.
A lot of booze as well.
Yeah,
booze and long lunches. But now it feels like that's gone, probably. Is it? The world of the actor?
I don't think that happens anymore, does it? There was an amazing article the other day. It was, I can't remember where it was, but it was reproducing a little piece written by one of the guys who played Doctor Who in the 70s. I can't. Do you know who they are? Famous guys.
Tom Baker?
Tom Baker, I think.
Tom Baker sounds
like. And it was him recounting a day in the life of Tom Baker. And it was literally, wake up, bleary-eyed hangover, don't know where I am, reach for the toothbrush. And always take a toothbrush with you wherever you go because you don't know where you're going to wake up. He always had a toothbrush on him. Fought my way down the stairs out into the blinking into the mid-afternoon sunlight of Soho. Goes to a bar, gets hammered. Just meet some other actors, has three or four different sexual partners, and goes and does a voiceover, gets hammered some more.
And the process begins again.
Yeah. So my line was, they're digestives, which, you know, charitably you could say, well, I thought of it as three words.
Mm-hmm.
And I played it as three words, and that was my mistake.
So what were the words again?
Well, their digestive. So it was TH, you know, it was their apostrophe, their, mm-hmm. their, mm-hmm. their. You see, I'm getting into my mindset again at the time. I was really overthinking it. If I just say their, will they know if it's spelt T-H-E-I-R or T-H-E-R-E? Well,
that's the big problem with the English language, isn't it?
That's one of the big problems.
Yeah.
And when that's half of your script.
The context of the scene would have cleared that up. But you felt you needed to.
Well, you can get trapped in overthinking. Mm. And... So I was thinking, like, is it they digestives? They are But if I go, they are digestives, I'm changing Akeborn's language. Dare I do that? Basically, I was thinking about that. I was thinking, is it they are? Is it their digestives? Because their digestives, their and as I was thinking that, it then dawned on me that...
The audience had been waiting for a full 30 minutes.
That the audience were waiting and the actor was looking at me and the other guy, and I still hadn't said it. And he said, then he had to say something like, are they digestives? And I luckily was managed to improvise, yes, under pressure. But no, that was it. That was the thing was, I had one line, I forgot my one line. And sometimes that can happen because you're overthinking your one little bit so much that, you know, that you mess it up. Certainly happened. It's happened to me once or twice. For example, another case of that happening with me once was, I had to, I once worked for a, I did a job briefly after university where I was a runner in a TV company making ads. And, you know, I'm not going to give the whole story, but put it this way. Eventually, there came a point where the petty cash little metal sort of suit briefcase thing that it was in went missing.
Henry.
I didn't take it.
Mm-hmm.
But I was sort of in charge of it.
Ah.
And also... I think it had become known that I slept after lunch. I slept the day out in the little room. It was me, loads of chunky videos. Loads of chunky, like not VHS, bigger than that ones they use. I don't know if they still use those.
It was like Betamax, is it, or something?
No, it was something that was industry, only industry.
Oh, I see.
These big chunky videos. There was a library there in the little room and the petty cash box.
And there you were, like the sleeping dragon upon his gold.
Mmm. And some brave Sir Gawain came in and snuck off with it, and I lost the job. Basically, this is about when you've got a small thing to do, but you manage to screw it up and become the centre of attention when you shouldn't be. Because basically, we were once filming an ad. It was an ad for a famous fast food restaurant chain.
Okay. Say no more, or do say more.
I'm not going to say which one it was. Put it this way. If I was to upgrade my computer and... describe my current one as a medium, I'd be getting a Big Mac. Relatively. Or a bigger Mac than my current one. Okay, say no more.
If you'd grown out of your current waterproof coat and you were going out to buy another one,
yeah,
then maybe you'd be getting a quarter pounder with cheese.
If you owned a chicken that you accidentally put through a nugget-making machine,
then you'd be all in the McFlurry.
And basically this ad involved, it was all about a little girl, a kid. Mm-hmm. It was a six-year-old child actor was the girl playing the part, and I think she was in the garden playing with some toys. That's it. It was about the little toys you'd get at this particular restaurant chain with the
if they had some sort of good mood meal deal, for example.
Yes, if they had some kind of maybe a cheerful snack option, cheerful meal.
The Ebullience Dinner.
And basically, this girl had to play with the toys, and she had some lines, and the ad was all about her. But what they needed was, in the background... Oh, this! In fact, it was a legal thing that you had to show that the child was had a caregiver or was supervised in some way in this ad. You couldn't show the kid by herself playing in the garden. So for legal reasons, they had to have a set of legs... Of adult male legs.
Mm-hmm.
Tick. sat on a deck chair in the background reading a newspaper. So again, the signifiers of being an adult, deck chair,
mm-hmm.
newspaper.
Legs.
And surprisingly hairy calves and shins, which mm-hmm. I'm blessed with. and have been from quite a young age. So so on the day they were just like, okay, we'll just get him, Henry, the one who seems full of promise, who works with us. So they got me in. I was like, all right. So I said, oh, fine, I'll do it. So I sat in the background, and basically all I had to do was hold the newspaper and occasionally turn a page. And basically the whole shoot, I just couldn't turn the page in a natural way. I just couldn't.
You haven't finished reading the article again.
Finished reading the bloody article.
You didn't want to give the impression that you were skim reading. This is a broadsheet.
I'm not a skim reader, okay?
And then they asked you to do it quicker, and you did it sort of Superman style, where you did the whole paper in 10 seconds.
And I kept on pulling focus, and basically this little girl just got nailed to everything she did, and the whole shoot descended into sort of like mayhem with me not having to reshoot and reshoot, me turning the page wrong.
Luckily, the corporation in question survived.
Share prices plummeted
briefly
on the release of the advert, but they recovered since.
Yeah. What's this advert about a girl being looked after by a robot?
But, and I'm sorry, but there's no way a robot would have legs that hairy. I mean, it doesn't make any sense.
You've overdone it.
Also, there's no sense with this advert that at any point they filmed a scene with a goblin in and then cut it out afterwards.
I like all that sort of old fairy tale, Germanic, slightly scary. There's something quite frightening about goblin. Just the word goblin and what is a goblin? Oh, God.
I find it quite kind of, I don't know, surprising, depressing, that as a race, the human race, we've decided that all fantasy fiction basically has the same four sorts of characters in it. You've got a goblin, a dwarf,
elf.
Tree, elf. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's given we're supposedly have this
goblin,
kind of limitless
dwarf, elf,
imagination.
And tree, yeah.
But we don't really. We just kind of use the same tropes we have done for...
Yeah, and even if you try and come up with a new one, for example, right now we could come up with a new one, a brand new original...
A brand new fantasy race to add to the pantheon. Yeah.
So...
The race of the Ploskies.
The Ploskies. So what are the Ploskies? Face of a poodle. legs of a...
Goblin.
Of a... Well, we've already got a goblin in there.
We've already got goblins.
We've already reached for goblin. We've established
the face, legs, arms, and torso of a goblin.
But where's the head of a poodle? Of a dwarf. But the face of a poodle. No, so let's try and make a non archetypical character. Mm-hmm. Okay. So face of a poodle. I think I'm happy with that.
A bungalow in place of legs.
Okay. So legs of a bungalow or bungalow legs. Mm-hmm. So is that one bungalow or what? One bungalow per two bungalows?
Two matching 70s-style bungalows.
Okay.
Okay.
Face of a poodle, bungalow legs, midriff, Ben?
Agnetha from ABBA.
Can I just change that a little bit, Ben? Can I adapt that creatively?
Yeah.
So it's Agnetha from ABBA's head.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But it's inside a kind of Dyson... a Dyson transparent sort of vacuum section. So, and it's kind of flipping, it's kind of moving about, it's kind of suspended in the air, but
it's
kind of floating
noisy.
About in the air.
So it's a very noisy creature. So this creature is going to sneak up on you in the middle of the night.
No, it's not about stealth.
It might get stuck in your chimney, it'd be an absolute nightmare.
It's not about stealth. It's disorientating, this one.
So it's noisy and territorial, perhaps? Fiercely territorial.
Yeah.
And instead of arms, it's got
saxophones.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, and it's, instead of shoulder, it's got mouths. So
instead of shoulders?
So it can play this. It's even more noise.
Nice.
Saxophones aren't in tune with each other, crucially.
Oh, that's good. And Agnetha's head sometimes gets slightly caught up in the mechanism and you have to whack it and then it floats off into the middle again, suspended. And she's trying to mouth something, but you can't hear it over the... You just can't hear
That's what's most haunting about the whole...
That's what's so haunting. She's trying to mouth something. Could be along the lines of what's going on. Yeah. It could be along the lines of this wasn't what I had in mind when we talked about doing virtual abattoirs.
And I thought it was a hologram thing.
I thought it was going to be more... I assumed it was going to be more of a hologram thing when I signed up.
I thought I'd be able to do this from home or...
Rather than me being trapped inside a Dyson.
Also, what have you done with me from the neck down? Because I do own that still.
Do you own your body?
I think so, although I dread to think what sort of contract she signed to get her head in the Dyson vacuum device in the first place. So
I mean, she's going to have some, if she gets out of this alive, she's going to be wanting to have some stiff words with her agent, isn't she?
With Bjorn and Benny. Coming with us.
Yeah.
Well, they'll be drinking the proceeds in Turks and Caicos. She's not going to get anywhere near them.
I was reading about ABBA the other day, and Bjorn... I think ABBA had a sort of quiet 80s. Mm-hmm. So they broke up in 81, I think, and then the members of ABBA didn't do very much in that way that often those kind of megastars don't for a little while. And then
fallow, don't you? You sort of lie fallow for a bit.
Well, Bjorn moved to Britain and started an IT company with his brother.
Really?
Yeah.
Followed his dreams, finally.
But maybe he was coming up with the prototype for the Agnetha Dyson.
Finally, the grinding pop job I did, which I had to do because you're expected to in Sweden, and it's what people
told
do.
Told your parents that's what you were going to do when you were small age, and they
Your dad said to you, if you think of doing anything other than reinventing electropop, you will be a huge disappointment to me.
Oh,
if you do anything other than use a lot of orchestral music to make a really gleaming pop sound that's really pure and true and has a lot of the quality of musicals about it, but universal, I'd be so disappointed in you.
People forget that you're very good at doing impressions of celebrities' dads, don't they?
I know.
That's how you got in.
That's how I got into the business. You got to have a thing. So then he was like, I can actually do what I talked about all those years ago in Stockholm University, when me and my friends would sit around smoking rollies and talk about, you know, maybe how one day we might set up a company which organises servers in such a way that the transferring of large attachments can be spread throughout the server, ergo speeding up data transfer, ergo optimising workplace solutions.
For businesses ergo, large and small.
Ergo, IT company.
And I say, thank you for the IT. My server's so fast.
Da, 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 da. Thanks for all the data I'm transferring. Who can live without this new plugin?
I ask with all honesty, what would life be?
Sign up for me. There's no reason to be. Sign up for 2 years and get free help desk for the first 6 months. Yeah. That's what it's all about, isn't it?
Yeah. So then after that, he chopped off Agnetha's head, put it inside a Dyson, and revolutionised the literary genre of fantasy. Because, no, seriously now, in terms of fiction, we've got Fantasy World, which is dwarves, orcs, goblins, done to death. Mm-hmm. Mm. Then we've got Sci-Fi World, which is all the same as well.
Mostly tends to be bipedal, humanoid aliens with something stuck on their head, maybe a different colour.
Yeah.
Doors that, like, going to go shunk.
Yeah.
Shunk.
Yeah. Screens which hover in the air now, and which I think would probably be really hard, because what's happening behind the screen would be very distracting. You'd be always looking at it going, okay, so this is how we're going to attack the mainframe. Our troops are going to come in from the right.
Sorry, stop hovering back there, because we are in the middle of a meeting, actually.
David, can you please stop hovering? Just wheel it up and put it in the electro cupboard of the future. Stick it in the electro cupboard. No, you don't have to wheel in the cable anymore, because everything now is non-cable. It's completely cableless, everything. So just shove it in. Thanks. Okay. So we assemble our troops over here on the east. We then attack the mainframe. But Clive, your face is just too complex visually. Can I come around this side? Yeah, get everyone around this side.
Your tea is steaming up the back of the screen. It's making the images.
I can't see anything. What we really need is a blank
wall. Please, no one
here.
Drink tea around the back of the hovering screen, because the steam. Please.
We've written this down on our electro sheets of paper, which are also hanging in the air and transparent, which you may not have seen them, because if there's anyone with a complex face or any kind of visual books or anything behind, It's very hard to focus the eye. Also, people have different levels of short-sightedness, which mean that everyone has to stand at different closenesses or foot.
Because we've got rid of glasses as an idea. Because they're too low-tech, but we haven't come up with a high-tech solution yet.
We're just going to have to
use the glasses.
Of distance instead.
We've thought that we haven't got this replacement for glasses yet, but actually sometimes just to nudge the technology forward, you need to take away what you've got. So we've got to bloody come up with a solution. But of course, now people can't write things down or focus.
Yeah, so we also got rid of antibiotics, and that was a bad idea.
That was a big mistake. Right, Dave, you've coughed. You're going to have to leave. You're going to have to go and never come back. If you walk out into the apocalyptic sort of death zone through that door there, which is what's left of the planet, because obviously all the world's economies have fallen apart because of the floating in the air screens, which no one can focus on. It's very hard to select things because the depth of how far your how long your finger is varies. So it's hard for it to know when it's being pushed or nudged. So all the world's economies have collapsed. We've just got this one unit, this one unit, one Hoover.
And everything's floating and we're all in zero G because we got rid of gravity as well. And it's an absolute mess.
Yeah. But luckily, Bjorn has sorted out the IT, so that's all working pretty well. The servers are fast, attachments are quick.
And, it's a great system. The only, as long as you try not to look at the actual, the sort of thing powering the unit, because it's Agnes's head just floating about. It's a bit unnerving. But
because she wants out. She wants out.
She wants out.
It's impossible to look at her and not come to that understanding very quickly.
It's clear now. She's managed to sort of bite bits of her own inner mouth out and spit them out onto the internal glass and spell it out in three languages now.
Swedish, Maltese and Bulgarian. Okay, that's your extra beans.
Thanks for listening.
Thank you.
Hugely appreciate it.
See you next time.
Cheerio.
Bye.
Bye.